All right, welcome everyone. I'm Jonathan Hughes with AMA Access. Today we have Brian Morrison with Proxy, who specializes in the getting those clients exit ready. And so we wanted to dive into a little bit more detail with Brian, but you know, first I wanted to kind of understand a little bit about who he is, what he brings to the table, why he's interested in doing this, and kind of those arrows that he's stuck in the quiver over the years. So welcome, Brian. So it's good to have you here.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so right now you're co-founder, CEO of Proxy. It was founded in 2019.
Right.
Previous to that, you had several startups and exits along your way in this meandering path. And, so I wanted to hear a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to where you're at, and then really dive into why you started Proxy and how that serves the space.
Yeah. So I'm a serial entrepreneur. I love the build, and I love being able to look in spaces and see where there's an opportunity for category creation. And I started out doing that in the marketing technology space. My very first company was touchscreen kiosks in hotels.
Right.
That gives you an idea of how old I am. But that actually was just a proof of concept to show how the internet worked. So we were so early on internet, we would walk into companies and say, we're going to talk to you about this great thing, the internet and Gopher. And they would just look at us with cross eyes and go, I don't know what you're talking
about. These were Gopher telephone.
Yeah, this was early days. And so we actually just said, this is a great concept of putting advertising in hotel lobbies, but how do we update it and how do we manage it? We'll manage it on an internet backbone. And so that was the idea. And we proved that model, and it was a horrible business. And we sold that. And then really that's when we started We See More, and We See More was an internet development firm, and it was, that was a very high time of, basically when it was the most important time in the internet. And we ended up, we were very, very lucky. We sold that a few months before the crash. And it was, I would love to say that was brilliant business strategy, but it wasn't. It was luck. We just happened to do a roll up. We saw where the industry was going and just recognized that we needed to move at a faster scale than we were doing. So went through that process. After that, I went and worked for a company called Omnicom, largest holding company of agencies and marketing firms in the world. And it was interesting because I had a lot of friends who knew that I was an entrepreneur, and they were like, you're going to last about 6 months in corporate America. You're going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the same thing. I kind of got drug in because I started working consulting with one of the agencies. And I ended up in Omnicom for 10 years and loved it because it was a very entrepreneurial environment where, you could do pretty much anything you wanted to do as long as you met the expectations of that group. And so I started working and running agencies and kind of got a name for turnarounds. And so a large part of that is just understanding the operations, the processes. How do you bring that kind of structure to a creative environment? And it's not an easy thing to do, but it was something that I just loved. And so I kind of became an intrapreneur. We started agencies within Omnicom. And then I woke up one day and I was like, I've created a lot of value for the corporate world, and I missed getting back to actually, doing it for myself.
Right.
and having an impact. So after I left Omnicom, I was serving on the board of several small to medium-sized businesses. And something consistently kept happening. I would walk in to a board meeting, and the board would somehow come up with something great, and they would say, you should consider this. And the CEO would go, we're going to do that. That's a great idea. And then we'd come back 3 months later and say, how'd that initiative go? And she'd say, we didn't quite get to it, but we're going to, for sure. It's still a great idea. We know we're going to do that. And so I just started watching. It happened repeatedly, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And so we just recognized the science behind that as the fact that a CEO kind of operates on a bimodal mindset from the rest of the organization, meaning they have a really good understanding of what their vision is, what they want. They kind of see everything at one time. So when somebody gives them input, they have the mental capacity to hear that and add it into their thinking. But then the rest of the organization is focused on what I've got to get done tomorrow. And so they just move at two different paces. And so I started thinking, like, how do we solve that problem? And I identified a role that I kept seeing called chief of staff. And I thought that was a pretty compelling role because they were able to kind of shape shift and focus on whatever the initiatives were that the CEO wanted to have happen. And so that's different than like the COO and the day-to-day operations. They were able to move at the same pace, same mindset as that CEO. And so that was the original thesis is, you know, how could we do that more effectively and efficiently? Because most people that were hiring chiefs of staff were Fortune 500 companies, big military. And so I was like, man, if anybody needs that, it's small to medium-sized businesses because they need somebody who can shape, shift, and change with the CEO. And so that's why we developed Proxy, and or at least that was the premise for why it came about.
So when you, you know, so early on, who was performing that role? Like, was it shared role in the C-suite? Was it just whoever the, you know, the that corporate leader could peg to run with the ball?
Or? Yeah, it was usually somebody who they just called their right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The challenge with that is usually that right hand, if they're great, they're either up or out.
Right.
And
yep.
So that's what tends to happen, right? And so what I think is most important in that role is consistency, somebody that you can actually count on. And if you invest in that role, how are you going to know that they're going to be there? And so that's why, frankly, I think it should be a third party, you know, because you can count on a third party.
Mm-hmm.
An individual staff member is going to say eventually, like, I want to go either, you know, I want your job or they get hired away. And so the way we do it is a little bit different. We put a strategy or an advisor person, and then we also put an integrator. And they kind of come together to work as what we would refer to as an executive multiplier. And so having someone who guides and drives, you know, someone who can see the 30,000-foot view, but also someone who can execute at the 5,000-foot view.
Right.
That's the special sauce. That's what we do that's a little bit unique.
Gotcha. So you describe the problem and provide the solution as
yeah.
far as executing with that leader. So,
well, and the main phrase there is executing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, certainly you have management consultant level perspective, but the most important thing is that we focus on execution.
Right.
Like we always talk to everybody about how do you close the execution gap? Because everybody's got a phrase of, you know, you should work on the business instead of in the business.
Right.
Well, the reality is most CEOs are in that role because they're really good at what they do in some aspect of the business. And so that's not an easy thing for people to shift in and out of.
It is. It's hard to have the same brain to come up with the idea and execute it while
exactly.
doing all the other things, right? And I think there's probably eye rolls in this room of the Hughes thought bubbles that sometimes come up and everybody runs away from, you know, running it down kind of thing. So yeah, I think that would be a nice luxury to have to someone that's kind of iterate on that singular focused idea. When you started in 2019, what was, I guess from, if I back up a little bit, what do you think of yourself as a marketer, as an operator? As,
me personally?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've always said that if you take marketing, technology, and design, and you put those three things together, that's my area of expertise.
Okay.
How they come together. I'm you know, I taught at SMU around some of those things. I have started and run businesses around those things. So I understand the nexus point between marketing, technology, and design exceptionally well. And so that's, as a practitioner, that's what I would say is probably my greatest strength. But then what I've started to do is apply that in systems to organizations so that we can figure out how do you design using technology. And then my area is typically around how are you growing and scaling.
How hard is it not to postmortem your old ideas with newfound knowledge that you're finding now?
You know, it's really interesting you say that because a lot of organizations run into the same problems at various stages in the business. So you do definitely want to go in and create the hypothesis that's relevant to that company. But there's so much consistency in what happens to a company at various growth stages. So what we've actually been able to do is bring a lot of great frameworks that we know for a fact work at various stages of business. So, you know, in some situations you might change how you do it, but, you know, if you're a 25-person company and you don't have a business operating system in place and you aren't managing that with some level of discipline, then you're going to max out at about 25 people. You're going to keep running into the same procedural problems, people problems. You'll run into those same challenges.
Right.
If you're at 75 people, you probably have to work on that lead team. You know, how are you actually at that point starting to work on the business and what kind of people are you bringing into it? If you're at 150 people, you're probably thinking about, like, what's the asset value in the organization and how am I doing pre-due diligence to put myself in a power position? But there's a lot of things like that that we just know at various stages of the business you should be paying attention to.
Right. And what you don't need to.
What you don't need to.
I think that's my – I'll speak for myself. That's the quiet the noise, as we say, you know, as far as how do we stay focused on what matters and given our time constraints. So, you know, you've mentioned it as proxy solving for that kind of execution gap that you see. Yep. And in one of the contexts and use cases of preparing that client to be exit ready, and if it's in anticipation of a transaction and so forth. I mean, I know it's not singularly focused on that, but you know, from just for our edification, what is that ideal client? You know, what's that sweet spot for you where you can be really confident that, you know, you're going to bring value and this is going to be a home run?
Yeah. Most of the clients that we work with, like I said, are ranging between 25 employees to 250 employees. And the reason for that is because you go through massive change in the organization at those various stages. So 25 employees. Now, whether or not you're thinking about exit ready and how to get, you know, those are things that I think you can walk into each time, and it doesn't necessarily go by the number of people. That goes by whether or not your industry segment is right, whether or not the multiples are right for you, and then how much can you improve those over time. So when we talk to people about pre-due diligence, like if somebody says, hey, I'm interested in selling like in 3 years or 1 year, we take them through scenarios using a AI platform that we've put together that allows us to understand where they're currently at, what the current value might be, and then just in improving operations, how much would it be worth in 1 year with what you can get done versus 3 years? So it kind of shows whether the juice is worth the squeeze.
Right.
And a lot of organizations that we'll work with will say, oh, I thought it'd be worth more. And we go, sure, you can change that, but you change that by fundamentally changing the structure of the organization and thinking strategically about how do they acquire other firms. And, you know, there's other ways to get to that. But there's a max on how much an organization can increase their value. And the main thing we try and do is just make it easy for them to understand.
Got you. And it's primarily professional service companies?
Yeah, most of the companies we work with are professional services because the greatest degree of complexity comes from people. You know,
sure.
the, the technology is what we often use to simplify things.
Interesting. When they come to you, how are they coming to you? How are they finding you? And because it's more than just hanging out a consultant shingle.
Right.
And so most of us from a business standpoint are usually leery of a consultant who wants to tell you what's all broke and then
right.
and then run away. And so how are people finding you?
It's a great question. So we have our own sales and marketing engine, of course, that we've built. And that is, largely content-based, where we're trying to do the obvious, stay in front of people, and we've got several different ways that we do that. But the other side of it is we're introduced oftentimes by value creators, lawyers, the attorneys, CPAs, investors, board members. So they're the trusted advisor to the CEOs.
Right.
And so that's where we tend to get a lot of the introductions. And we foster those kind of relationships to help them understand why we can help and, how we can fit in and make it super easy for them. Because our business structure, like I said, it's a little bit different. We don't do consulting where we come in and try and create, tons of projects where we get paid on everything, and that's the classic model.
Right.
Ours is all subscription-based. And so it's flat fee, no surprises. That's why our average tenure with a client is 3.8 years. So when we start working with a client, we continuously prove our value every week. And I say week because we literally have no long-term contracts.
All right. So you said 3.8 years, which is pretty impressive. So does that attach to what that normal kind of exit timeline looks like when you come on board, or are
it's
we kind
very
of
relevant.
Blending
yeah,
different it, engagements?
It's very relevant to that. What we usually do is to make it really, really simple, we just do a 6-week engagement to be able to show people how we work, how we think. We have a very methodical approach to onboarding clients so that they can understand that they can trust us. Because everything that we do is so focused on the fact that you have to have somebody at your right hand that you believe in. So literally the way we go through that in 6 weeks is we provide an incredible amount of value in a very short period of time. But then from that, there should also be a plan. Like, what can you actually do and what can you get done in the next 3 quarters that will significantly impact your value? So that's what we do in that 6 weeks, in addition to taking on a few of those low-hanging fruit projects where we usually look for, like, what's the thing that's been bothering you for the last year? And there's always something. Like, somebody says, yeah, I've been trying to get this right. It's driving me crazy. And so we'll attack that. And we'll show them, like, what does the deliverables look like? How do we think? Will this make an impact, and can you use it immediately? And so that's just part of that process. And then after 6 weeks, if we're going to continue and we both know that this is a good relationship, then from that point on, it's pretty easy because from a business perspective, you're not going to get surprised by us. And we aren't going to come back to you and say, hey, I want a raise. And you got to figure out my insurance for me, and you have to figure out my, taxes and billings, and there's no issues in managing us.
So on a typical engagement, you said it's usually two people.
It's always two people. So there's always going to be an advisor and an integrator.
And they are working full time. Are they half time? Are they remote on site?
So yes, everybody's remote. That's why we can do it efficiently. If you were going to hire the role full time, it would be probably double what you end up paying us. The thing that's interesting about how we do it is you're never going to outpace proxy. Typically, the challenge is an organization can't absorb that much change. And so what we work on over time is a company's management metabolism. So when you start working with us, you might only be able to absorb, two major initiatives, in a quarter or 2 quarters. By the time we're done working with organizations, they're taking on 3, 4, 5 major initiatives that are really organizational changing. And so that's the goal is to – our metric that we use is management metabolism.
So just for to level set with everyone, what's a good kind of example of an initiative? Like what is that standard kind of project?
So like one of the things I was talking about is a business operating system. So like you hear people talk about EOS or OKRs or Six Sigma. All of those are great flavors of the same thing, which is, you know, how does an organization create common language and create discipline that we can all agree with? And so that's what we'll typically – that's a perfect example of if you do not have a business operating system, we can help design that for what's right for your organization and implement and manage that. That's an easy one.
Got it. So many of our intermediaries and advisors often will come across, you know, with folks that just aren't ready yet, that mm-hmm. maybe either psychologically or operationally, or maybe there's that one little nugget they can tweak that's going to have an exponential increase in value. And so so I think a big struggle right now is for folks to – how do you incubate that? That client while kind of keeping them, you know, connected with you as an advisor, knowing that down the line, you know, and you know, keeping that idea warm. So, you know, what are those kind of, I guess, referral trigger points is, you know, where you're very relevant to that network of, you know, In use cases where they might say, well, if you just did this or you just did that, I know someone who can talk to you, you know, and then, you know, how does that dynamic usually work, you know, when you're dealing with referral folks?
Well, so I mentioned before that we're often brought in by CPAs, attorneys, mm-hmm. investors, board members. The board members are easy. It's the same case study that I gave you earlier where mm-hmm. they know that there are initiatives that they would – if they would just execute on them, it would make massive change and they can't get out of their own way. And that's not any shortcoming on the organization. It's literally that bimodal mindset that CEOs is very hard for them to be able to have somebody move at that same pace, and the initiatives that we're working on are typically not – something that's handled by the CFO or something that's handled by the attorney, you know, by the chief marketing officer or the chief HR officer. There are things that go across the entire organization. So like if I'm doing customer journey mapping, that's a huge initiative, right? That if you just said, hey, I'm going to all of a sudden become an expert in that. Well, that's a pretty challenging thing to just automatically become an expert at. And mm-hmm. most C-suite lead team members are not experts at it.
Right.
They might be aware of it, but they haven't actually executed it that often. And even if they have, they don't want to do the actual work. And so in our situation, we could look at customer journey mapping as a common thing that we come in and take a look at what is the overall structure of the journey, what are the specific processes within it, and then more importantly, like where do we find automations? How do we improve the speed at which we do that? How do we improve the customer experience? Those are all the things that it seems like, oh, my God, that's a huge initiative. But it usually shows up because the CPA recognizes they never get the cash in on time.
Mm-hmm. So I imagine during an engagement, you can't help but assume that company voice, that note, that as you work on defining that ethos and like culturally, what's that DNA? Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself being maybe that connective tissue post-transaction, especially in a situation where the business owner might go away? You know, is that interesting kind of having just that connective tissue?
Absolutely. What we've seen that more on is the buy side, where we're working with a client and they're buying another organization, they're doing an acquisition, and we do the post-merger integration for them in that environment. If we were brought in by the investor, for sure that would make sense. Post-merger integration afterwards, that's what a proxy would lead and mm-hmm. own. That's a perfect example of the other end of the spectrum. So that kind of gives you an idea if we're going all the way back to business operating system, enterprise metrics, really understanding the enterprise metrics, those are early, early stage things that most companies might not be able to see.
Right.
Then you get into succession planning, lead team formation, you know, how you are understanding the processes, so customer journey mapping. Those are all the things that kind of move you through to the next level.
Are you coming – so if you're kind of on the sell side with that business owner, do you kind of turn into maybe that therapist, that, you know, that kind of ear as a – you know, in the context of an exit strategy, the closer you get, the, you know, that introduces a lot of different elements, especially from, you know, founders. And
yeah.
So how does that dynamic work?
You know, it's interesting because coaching's super important for CEOs a lot of times because they just don't have somebody to talk to.
It's a lonely job, right?
Station, right? I've always felt the opposite of that. I think being a CEO is fantastic because I'm a pretty open leader and, you know, I bring my friends into the organization. I love that. But there are decisions that you might make where if you start thinking about selling the company or if you're thinking about, like, I need to be able to fund something, but somebody on my lead team is going to want to create a fiefdom and they need more staff. And there's always some sort of a bias.
Mm-hmm.
So having somebody who understands the organization, understands the people in the organization, and can also be that coaching ear. That's kind of the secret sauce of what Proxy does.
Right. Now I imagine it kind of could cannibalize, you know, the business of Proxy as it is, but I assume you're a solid advocate for permanent chief of staffs in businesses, you know.
Sure, if it makes sense. You know, again, I would argue that I kind of feel like the Proxy model, the reason we designed it is because I think it's a better mousetrap. Like the full-time role, if you think about if I hired a chief of staff when I've got 25 employees and I have that same chief of staff when I have 150 employees, I may need something different.
Gotcha.
What's different about Proxy is I shift out and change the advisor or the integrator, usually on an annual basis.
Okay.
So the reason for that is because it brings a new, fresh perspective, yet there's always continuity. So you always have the integrator or the advisor for ongoing continuity. And there's no way you can do that with one individual.
So I've never seen this as a posted job description. So what is, you know, if it's bifurcated materially between those two roles, mm-hmm. Is it ever a shared role or are those two different personalities?
They're two different individuals that always work as one. Okay. And that's what we're very good in Proxy at making that advisor and integrator seem like one role. And so if something is going on where your business needs more of the advisor, we'll tip more heavily to that. And so the advisor will take a more active role during that time. If it comes down to, and most of the time what it comes down to is a plan is laid out and I need to execute that plan, that's more integrator heavy.
Who's that person? Who's the integrator?
The integrator? Yeah, it's usually someone who has been a chief of staff. And they're the type of person who is wicked smart in analytics. You know, they just understand and get data. They understand people exceptionally well. And they understand project management. So they've got the ability to operationalize ideas.
Is there a typical career path that person has on their resume?
Yeah, it's literally a chief of staff. So like a few years ago, we actually acquired an organization called the Chief of Staff Roundtable.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because that's our talent pool. And it lets us have access to thousands of fantastic chiefs of staff around the world. And
are they usually coming as operators, you know, coming up through the ranks?
Yeah.
Typically, what's their degree in when they've...
That's a great question. I mean, a lot of them have an orientation towards HR, organizational management. Ironically, we've had a fantastic run of integrators who were people that were very high up in the advertising world.
Interesting.
Like we had one individual who was the COO of a 500-person agency that just did not want that kind of pressure anymore. They had done it. They'd built it all out. They were in a stage where they wanted to be able to control their world. And so they came on with Proxy as an integrator because they got to work with multiple clients. And what they really loved was being able to see the fruits of their labor.
Right. Just the project base, you know, don't know what tomorrow brings. I think that's a
yep.
– once you have that personality, I think it ruins you for a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
But so from on the advisor side, like what are you seeing like as that – those bullet points on their resume?
Yeah, those folks have typically run their own businesses. They've probably had at least an exit, or they've worked in Fortune 500 at a SVP or higher level. And so, you know, they've seen it from a lot of different angles. You know, there's always a different flavor for each one of our advisors. So somebody might have a sales and marketing background more so. Somebody might be more tech-oriented, more culture-based and people-based, might be more innovation-oriented. And so we have strategists who have and advisors who have all that kind of unique positioning. But they could look at any business and be able to, you know, help them using the frameworks that we have.
So how meta is Proxy? Do you have your own chief of staff?
We do. We do, of course. I mean, it'd be crazy for me not to drink our own champagne.
Right. So from when you talk about your ideal client,
yeah.
And then I think if I'm an advisor and I'm thinking, and I've got you on my Rolodex,
is
certainly professional services, certainly, you know, exit is a good context, or it could be otherwise. Is there a company size, either revenue, transaction volume, number of people? Is it 25? Is that a floor?
You know what I tell everybody from a referral perspective? If I'm an advisor and I am trying to identify who who should I call Proxy for? I always say, give us the watch list.
Right.
So the organizations, if I'm going to talk to 50 companies in a year and I'm going to work with 5 to 10, what I would suggest is, who is that next rung of companies that you're talking to that you go, I really like those people, but it's too early.
Right.
Those are the right kinds of people to pass on because we can actually help them grow and scale the business.
So if I'm an advisor and then and I see these, I'm not going to say warts, but challenges that I know there's low-hanging fruit, and basically knowing that it's too early for me, but I can, you know, I know that this can be infinitely better, and even if it doesn't exit, it's going to be better. And
yeah.
So and you know, a good score chart is just making more money, I think, you know, from a revenue perspective. So so I think that professional service, more than 25 people, there's some short, quick win opportunities where it's definitely symbiotic to have someone like Proxy in place for, you know, getting someone exit ready or just ready.
Yeah. You know? I think what we tend to see is there's somebody already who's a trusted advisor in the organization, and they see what the challenge is.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be some execution. There's a clear execution gap. And so, you know, for the CPA, they can handle the books. They get everything put together. They know exactly what they're doing, but they can't get in to run cultural elements. You know, they aren't going to go suggest how to put a business operating system in place.
Right.
They know that half of their clients have a great business operating system. They're doing a great job, and they know the difference. They just don't want to have to go. You know, they get drug into it. And so that's usually the perfect relationship where they go, I know I can put Proxy in there. They'll fix that problem and any of those other problems. And then my job becomes a whole lot easier too.
Right. So in the situation where you were there first and there is no advisor yet in the deal, you have someone, maybe you've hit that milestone or they're ready to explore that exit.
For sure.
How are you thinking, you know, Are you guiding them towards advisors? You know, how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, we have certified exit planning advisors in our organization. And so we'll take them up to a certain point, but even in those scenarios, we're at best we'll play quarterback. and then we're going to bring in the right players. So if they don't already have that, then we'll absolutely bring partners in. And so that's the best symbiotic relationship, is where, you know, if I'm a value provider and I'm already thinking about a company, but I don't want to do the actual work. I just want to be able to advise that company and have those things magically happen.
Right.
That's where proxy can fill in those gaps. And then instead of me working with 5 to 10 prospects, I'm working with 10 to 20 because proxy is driving a whole lot of those. And so that's the right idea, because we do that on that side. Then as we bring in other customers, you know, that are starting to get ready, we'll know when they're ready, and we start bringing in the right partners as, you know, as we're going along. So we don't want it to be one of those things where we all raise our hands and go, oh, it's going to happen in a week. We've got to get this done quickly. Instead, we'd rather start those relationships. If it's a 3-year window, we want to start those relationships 2 years out, 1 year out, so that everybody's aware that they'll be part of that deal team.
So from a technology standpoint, you know, it's cliche to say the word AI, but, you know,
you have to.
But as far as beyond not just AI, but that is the, you know, the flavor of the decade, how are you leveraging technology to do this? Obviously, you're doing it remotely, but what other kind of tools are you interjecting with these folks?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we do with, it seems like every one of our clients now, is help them build out a center of excellence around AI. So we have a chief AI officer. We use AI in our own organization in terms of how do we start to identify, like if we've created out IP, and then we've literally built out applications and solutions for our clients. So we use it internally, but how do you start to bring the entire organization along with it? You know, I mean, I've worked in internet, mobile, social, you know, as a specialty. Each one of those, we've seen this movie before. Mm-hmm. This movie's just in double time.
Right.
So we're helping organizations figure out how do we start to play with it and learn from it? How do we prepare our organization so everybody can get engaged with it and use it properly and with some governance? And then how do we start to make it not the CTO's initiative or the CEO's initiative? How do we make this something that the entire organization is a part of? So we'll build that center of excellence to be able to have them start thinking about how do we look at the business case for each one of the pilots that everybody is going to eventually want to use.
Right.
And then after that, how do you actually manage it once it goes into production? That's very different than, yeah, I use it to write my emails.
Right. So obviously, between your own personal successes building those companies and then through proxy, you've seen under the hood of a lot of companies, not only in how they're executing technology today, but just culturally, like what works, what doesn't, what's just noise, you know, is this not just a slogan on the wall? Are they actually living that? You know, so in the context of you have a room full of M&A advisors and, you know, if you send a client their way, or, you know, what is that one thing about owners that you would share with them that they should know, you know?
Man, that's such a good question. I think there's a commonality among founders and CEOs in SMBs that they need to be able to have that. You know, I talked about that 6 weeks when we work with a customer, and we literally call that process speed to trust. And there's a difference between I'm going to come in and do this for you versus I'm going to enable you. And so, you know, having that trust with that executive that you are there just for them, you were there to make them successful. That's what we've found. Like, that's our absolute focus, is trust that we will be able to do that for you and we will serve you specifically. And I know that sounds, you know, it sounds like it's probably too much for one individual, like it's all about the CEO. But the reality is that CEO has to trust that you are there for them. And so that's why, you know, when you talked about having their ear and them being able to say anything, if you're one of those value advisors, they have to know that you are in this to help them succeed. And then after that, they can listen to anything you say.
Right.
So how do you get to trust, and how do you get to it in a very quick way? That's our primary focus. In 6 weeks, you're going to walk away and go, I know I trust Proxy.
Right. And I think that's telling you, for someone like me who's always skeptical,
yep,
that knows that I just feel that person's transaction-based. But that sure does cut through a lot of rhetoric if you trust that individual, for sure.
Well, and so for us, the way we do it is we just build a business structure that clearly, you know, there's no long-term contracts. We give you your money back after the 6 weeks if you didn't get what you wanted out of it. We show them deliverables at the end of every week, and that's as long as we work with that organization. So we make it pretty simple for them to recognize, like, we are only there to make you successful. And there's no surprises in pricing. We aren't upsell, no cross-sell. Those are all things that are – we just do everything we can to just kind of wipe that concern out.
Yeah. I think that's being that owner advocate and ear, and it feels like you're a proxy on not only to the owner but to the advisor as well. So the – very, very interesting, and I know we have a room full of people and advisors that would love to bend your ear. So we hope to see you at our next event.
Yeah.
So you've been hearing from Brian Morrison from Proxy. This has been AMA Access, and we sure do appreciate you coming on.
These kinds of conversations are happening all the time. We'd love for you to join in, whether it's through our monthly webinars, our biannual conferences, or our SEMA certification, and then we have our chapter events across the nation all year round. You can find out more at amaonline.com. Until then, see you next time.